Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day workshop for men seeking to overcome any destructive sexual habits. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery with decades of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next workshop coming up January 8th through the 10th in Pennsylvania. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with Stephen. Stephen, how are you?
It is a wonderful day in God's creation. Thank you.
It is a good day. Well, folks, we're glad that you've decided to join us. You know, as we near the end of the year, I just want to remind you again that we're a listener-supported broadcast, and we're grateful for those who've come alongside and partnered with us. We would like to invite more of you to partner because we've got some opportunities to expand the broadcast next year into a couple of different regions. And in order to do that, there's some expense involved in getting on some of these radio stations. So if you would like to partner with us to allow more people to get help from this program, simply go to puresexradio.com and then click on the donate button and you can learn about the ways to partner with us. So, Stephen, why don't we kick off here this week? We've got just kind of some random insights, comments, different thoughts, and we hope that this will end up being some kind of coherent message to the listeners out there.
That's pretty good. I like the way you say the random thoughts. What that really means, I'll tell you, folks, it means things Stephen has written, scratched on a piece of paper, and typed up and brought in. So we're going to do random thoughts. I like interesting thoughts and challenging ideas, and I hope you do also. So that's what we're bringing you today. Here's what I've come to. This is, you get to peek into the mind of a counselor that's been doing this for 27 years when you listen to this program. So here's what I've concluded recently. I've just narrowed it down to this statement. If you have an addiction, you have a broken emotional program. That's it. Anybody with any kind of an addiction, think about it. Have you ever met a really mature addict? No, they can be successful, but they can't be emotionally mature because they've been working on their substance of choice, their addiction issue. So I'm going to comment. I'm going to make these comments. I want you to give me some feedback on them, Jonathan. So whenever you meet a man with an addict that's an addict, he has an addiction of any kind, you immediately think, oh, your emotional system is broken because you don't know what to do really in life but use your substitute.
I wouldn't necessarily encourage leading with that statement, because then you'll probably, it will.
And that's not the first thing to tell
them. You will probably prove in that statement that their system is broken, because you'll get punched in the nose, you know?
That's too good. But I'm saying you should say this to yourself.
Right, exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, because I do think, and I think that helps you be able to, because otherwise it can be incredibly frustrating to try to deal in a healthy way with an addicted person, right? I mean, think about all the wives that we have heard from over the years, and they're just incredible. They're frustrated
because they've said helpful things to their husband and tried to tell him the truth and inside, and they bring value and
she's just so weary, and it's because I think she's having an assumption that I'm trying to connect with an emotionally healthy person. And if she would start with the assumption, like you're talking about here, listen, if somebody's addicted, they have a broken emotional system. I'm not saying that this makes everything better, but it helps her filter through the idea that this is an emotionally unhealthy person.
And he's going to go to anger fast, or he's going to get lost fast. He's going to run away fast. He's going to attack you fast. Why? He's trying to protect himself. Mm-hmm. That's all he knows what to do. And so if you know the system is broken and he hasn't faced his brokenness, then he hasn't asked for help, then you got to wait.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that the interactions won't be frustrating and sad, but it might at least give a little bit of buffer there for the person who's trying to engage the addicted person.
And it's a long game, right? Wouldn't you say that's true? This is a long process. If they developed an addiction over 10 years or 20 years, it's going to be a bit of a slow journey towards healing and recovery.
And wouldn't you say that the emotional system is broken in a person who's addicted because it typically got stunted in childhood? Because, I mean, don't we see that every single guy we've ever dealt with, the issues started when he was a kid. And so, I mean, I don't know if there's any kind of scientific link or anything like that, but wouldn't you say just in your experience that there's a pretty strong correlation between when a guy started heavily veering off into this isolated, disconnected pathway, even in childhood, that typically you can kind of see that that's about when he would be stunted emotionally in his
development? Yes, because He uses childlike behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. He hides, he avoids, he tries to pretend.
He throws a fit.
And then he throws a fit and gets angry. What is that, 10 or something? So that's what your point is. That this is old behavior from long ago that has some connection. So number two on our list, in a relationship, say a marital relationship, some people need rules. And if you don't understand relationships, then you need rules to get through. Okay, what are the rules? We go on a date on Friday night. I bring you flowers. I sit with you and I try to be present. And I do some mechanical things that I think I'm supposed to do. I try to listen to you. I try to be empathetic. I do things because I can do behaviors, but I'm not so good at the things that a relationship really needs. What does it need? Play. It needs rest. It needs grieving together, worship and prayer. We need to do all these healthy sort of spiritual, emotional things. But if you don't know how to do them, you need rules.
Well, isn't that interesting? As you're saying that, I'm thinking about all the many men that have come through our workshop and our three-day workshop, and I think, man, how many times have we heard the comments from guys in those workshops that just, they look you straight in the face and they go, what do I do?
That's true.
You know, they want the list. And I'm not anti-list. I mean, I think that's where you have to start. And I think that's what you're saying here is sometimes, listen, for a guy who has a completely broken emotional system, really, truly doesn't know how to engage and even connect on any kind of emotional level, it's baby steps. You sometimes you do have to start a guy out with even maybe giving him some phrases, giving him some very concrete instruction. But what I think I'm hearing you say is that there's a sense at which you need to kind of graduate into a more fluid understanding of what it means to actually
restful,
connect.
Ease. Yes, curious. I'll tell people sometimes, I'll tell men, be a curious boy, would you? Just be a curious boy. Because we've forgotten how to be curious. I wonder why she's crying. I wonder what it means. Why is she saying that? What does she want from me? Be curious boy instead of fix it man. You know? So number three is, I was listening to this guy talk, and he was saying, well, the reason that I'm successful, I've been successful in the military is because I learned these military patterns of maneuvering around. And he was on this sort of drill team that used patterns and performed, and he was very successful. And then now, later in life, he says, I love dance because there's patterns, and if you just learn the patterns, life is easy. And I thought to myself, I wonder if men could learn emotional patterns. I wonder if men who've been addicted, that are waking up and coming out of it, could use that principle that wives are patterned people. They're not random, fluid. Every day a new personality shows up with whole new vocabulary you've never heard before. No, we're all patterned, repetitive. And I just wondered if that would be a helpful thought, to recognize that emotions are patterned, people are patterned, and if you didn't fight it, you could learn the pattern.
And that's the key right there, I think, the idea of not fighting it. Because I think a lot of times our natural inclination is we are so self-absorbed. I mean, that's part of just, I think, our broken humanity is we're just so self-absorbed that when we see the pattern in somebody else that just doesn't seem to click with our patterns, we go into conversion mode. Okay, how can I convert this person to my patterns? And I think what you're saying is, if you understand that life is a series of patterns and we are each unique in our patterns, then we might be able to celebrate those differences. We might be able to see where, hey, you know what, that difference in you is a positive for me in this way, and my difference is positive for you. You see where connections can be made rather than, ugh, man, you know, you're so different from me and I can't believe that you think that way and I can't believe that you would have those ideas, and we're critical rather than celebratory.
And what I want guys to understand is, I'll say it to you, you have to learn your wife's patterns, right? You don't have to learn your neighbor's wife's pattern or all your cousins. You have to learn one woman's patterns. When does she get tired? When does she want to talk? How does she act when she's cranky? Right? When does she want comfort? How does she want comfort? Learn the pattern. Repeat the pattern. Mm-hmm. So number four, you know, it seems to me in life that the emotional self battles the spiritual self, right? Because we're spiritual beings, but we're also emotional beings and we're physical beings. And so what I want, when I want it, the way I want it, is not always consistent with what God says.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, and we talked in a previous broadcast about the broken emotional self and how do you mature, and I think we can still have our weaknesses and yet be maturing. And I think what you're talking about here is that process, that in order for the emotional self to mature, we need to realize that there are standards. There are standards by which God has called us to live and to even think and to operate. And so sometimes what we struggle with, I think, is the fact that our emotional system does want to throw a fit.
Fast and quick and first.
Yeah. And I think what God is saying with this, in terms of this spiritual system, the standards that he has, is he's not saying, oh, I can't believe you have that emotional system. I think what he's saying is, hey, when that fire's off, I want you to think on a higher plane. I want you to go to a different place. I want you to be able to tap into the spirit and the power that I give you so that you respond differently. He's not shaming you for having the emotional
So mess. I'll tell you, sometimes I'll say to myself, spirit to the front.
Mm.
Spirit to the front. Because that two-year-old fit-throwing boy is out there making a fool of himself. Spirit to the front. Yeah. Right? I need something to lead besides my emotional self that wants to get on the floor and stomp and scream and go, what I want now, my way. Spirit to the front.
And I think that's great because I do think we need, I don't want to call them like mental tricks, but I do think we need things that give us visuals, give us images, give us a picture of, okay, what needs to be happening here? Does, you know, the 2-year-old flesh need to be, you know, wagging me or, you know, dragging me around? Or does the Spirit of God need to step forward and be the one to take the lead? So I think I like the way sometimes you paint pictures and then speak those things, because I think speaking things out loud too, I think, is important because it helps.
There's power. And it's the life and death. The power of life and death is in the tongue, right? Mm-hmm. So number 5, what keeps you from deep rest? Mm-hmm. Way back from the beginning when I was doing groups with guys and saying, man, there's this restlessness in us, this tension, this irritability, this frustration. I brought some church leaders in and said, can you teach us how to rest? We don't know how to rest very well. And so the question now for each listener, and I'm going to pose this to you too, what keeps you from deep rest?
Well, now you're getting into my business, Stephen. You know, this is one of the things that I'm personally challenged with a lot. And I think it's just because of somewhat of my personality makeup. I tend to have a kind of an entrepreneurial spirit. I can definitely drift into workaholism. And I don't mean that by meaning that I'm in an office 80 hours a week. I mean that when I'm not engaged in work, it's hard for me to turn off my brain in that aspect. And so I think a lot of times for me, just the type of work I'm in, the leadership responsibilities I have, that keeps me a lot of times from deep rest because I'm consumed. And some of it is even stuff that I'm like, this is legitimate. I'm burdened. I have an agony. I've got deep passion for this topic. And so, but God has often reminded me and saying, listen, you're going to completely fizzle physically if you don't find times of being able to shut down, let yourself just breathe a little bit. But
so should you say practice rest?
Mm-hmm.
Being, whole being, practice rest, go to rest, go practice rest. I mean, somehow even the word, I think, is useful. Because I think that TV and entertainment and noise, I listen to the radio and I'm driving and it's just like I'm fighting traffic and listening to these topics and it's like, and sometimes I just turn it off. Just turn this stuff off. Well, you go to rest, practice rest. So that's part of the challenge we put out there.
And I want to make one other comment about this because I know what has helped me, and I'll just put this out there as something that may help some of our listeners. What has helped me when it comes to deep rest is the environment matters. And for me, a lot of times, nature is a powerful, soothing agent for me to just be able to get out into nature. You know what? Sometimes nature isn't quiet, but it's a different kind of noise. You're hearing you're hearing deer rustle in the woods. You're hearing a stream that's going through, you know, the woods. And so I think nature a lot of times has a calming effect on our body, on our soul.
And don't you do something else to rest? It has a little white ball.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
You hit it, then you chase it down.
Yeah, it's
and talk to it, and then you hit it again, and then you chase it down. I think that's...
So sometimes good recreational activities can help too.
That's good. So if someone... This is a second thought about an addict. If someone is an addict, then you have to assume they practice being emotionally detached.
Mm-hmm.
They live emotionally detached. They practice that skill. It's essential to be detached because they have to go away and hide. They have to hide part of themselves. They have hide their rituals. They have to be secretive. They have to keep growing an alternative life right next to this life. So there's going to be some detachment.
And you know what's interesting? I think this actually ties in very well with the previous one about struggling with deep rest, because I think the person who is addicted is not restful. That is a person who is full of anxiety, fear, a lot of times a lot of low-grade frustration and anger. And so definitely their soul is not at rest, and a lot of the fear will drive them away from the very emotional attachments that they need in order to take them to deeper rest.
Wow, that's good.
So it's like this vicious cycle that is continually removing them from one of the contexts in which they can have that comfort, that rest.
It
that
should,
peace.
Right?
Yes,
and
exactly.
Should practice rest with the spouse, mm-hmm. and create a safe place, right? A little bubble we go into until the world go away.
Well, I think you can even have that rest emotionally in deep friendships, too. So not even necessarily
That's
a
true.
Marriage. I think
yes.
you can have a deep friendship that provides some of that comfort and peace.
Mm-hmm. So here's a comment that was made. I don't do deep work. Like, I don't like hard conversations or emotionally filled moments or going to deep, dark places. I don't do deep work.
Well, I kind of laugh at this because I'm going, well, who runs to the front of the line to say, I want to do hard work? You know, so,
I do. Yeah. I do. I'm sort of weird. I do. I'm raising my hand. Me. It's like I was making this statement to my friend the other day, and I was saying, some conversations are just so boring. They're just full of factoids. There's no life. There's no passion in them, you know. And it's like, somebody tell me something significant, will you? Mm-hmm. Tell me a story about joy or grief or longing. Tell me something about life and passion.
But, know? Well, I can tell you this, Stephen. I mean, I've, believe it or not, I've known you for almost 20 years, and I can tell you that you are not like most of the guys out there. And you have to also realize, listen, you've been on a multi-decades journey, I think, to get to this. I mean, well, I think you've always had a general fascination about human beings and emotions and all that. I think if you would even look at your own history, you've come to this place over a long period of time. And so when we're talking about most people, especially those who are, man, they're on the front end, and this guy who's probably saying, I don't like to do deep work. Well, guess what? He's probably not had any experience with much deep work.
That's true.
And so I think most people, because they're carrying all of their brokenness, they're hiding it, they're pretending that they're stronger than they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think generally speaking, folks like that are not going to be going, man, let me run to the front of the line and do really difficult emotional, you know, hard work. Which is why I think we need, and this may be a little sidebar, but I talk with churches about this all the time, pastors, anybody mm-hmm. who has some kind of influence and also access to buildings and space is, we need to create more safe environments where people can have that initial conversation to share their story.
Mm.
Because one of the reasons people say, I don't want to do hard work, is because probably if they've ever even dipped their toe in the water, man, somebody thrashed them. It backfired on them.
That's
true. Somebody slandered them, whatever else. And it's like, we need safe places for people
and
to share their
story. And people will say, well, don't say that. Or don't talk like that. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm just telling my story. No. It's like, yeah. They're so scared to go to a deep place that they make you stop going there.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we're just going through random thoughts. So I'm going to jump here. Because one of the safest statements that an addict can make is, I don't know. I'm trying to flag you off. I'm trying to give you little information. I don't know. Well, what'd you do? Where were you? Those hard questions are coming. They sound like shame and guilt and blame and attack. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing we tell men, at least I tell men at the weekend, is stop saying I don't know. Just don't say it anymore. It's a hiding place. And if you're trying to grow, you can't say, I don't know. You can say, give me time, let me think about it. I'm not sure how to answer the question, but don't say, I don't know.
Or you can respond with what emotion you're feeling. That scares me. I feel threatened by that.
That's good.
Really confused. Can you say it another way? Because I'm trying to connect, but I don't know. I'm struggling with my thoughts. I'm feeling scared, you know, that kind of thing, where at least you're giving more than just the immediate veil of, I don't know. And then it's like, that's a conversation ender too, which is really, I think, what an addicted person is trying to do, is saying you're tapping a nerve here. One
yes.
thing you can, I guess, from the other side, is one thing you can know is that if somebody starts to say, I don't know, you can probably know you're in the right realm of what your line of questioning is. Because you're hitting the very place they're trying to hide.
You're pushing on something. That's good. A minute ago you were talking about is a lot of our programming from our childhood, things we learned. And when this guy said this statement, I thought how childish the statement is. He said, if I don't talk about it, I don't have to talk about it. If I just don't talk about it, I don't have to talk about it. You know, and it's like, well, what is that, 8 or 10 or something year old thinking? If I don't say it, nobody will know. Well, you know, people around you sort of know.
It's kind of like the 2 or 3 year old that covers his eyes and thinks that because he can't see anybody else, nobody can see him, right?
That's good.
And it kind of reminds me, too, of one of the things we talk about in the workshop is this poor solution that guys have. They think that not talking about their sexual struggles is the best way to deal with it. And I think it's because, you know, we talk again about there's not many safe environments. People feel a sense of shame. If they ever do start to bring up, man, where they're struggling and where they're feeling broken, everybody shuts them down or they push them away. And so that's why a lot of guys, then they just decide, I don't talk about this.
Yeah.
And that's my solution, is to not talk about it.
So one painful statement that a wife made was this. She said to her husband, there are things about me that you've changed. Unfortunately, they're for the worst. Like, I have less self-esteem by living with you. I've lost a lot of sleep. And emotionally, I'm pretty torn up.
Mm. Well, and here's what I would say. I mean, certainly we know that spouses have probably the most profound influence on each other because it's the most intimate relationship that we can have. And I don't know if, I mean, I don't want to too quickly flip to the positive side of this, but I think about this and I go, okay, husband, you see what a powerful influence you have on your wife. If that's true in the negative, could it not also be true in the positive? Could you have, you know, could there be 5 years from now a change in her statement that says, you know what, there's things about you that have changed me for the better?
Yeah, that's good.
I've seen you take responsibility yes. for your brokenness. I've seen you take the initiative to get help for it and to go seek counseling and to plug into a group. I've seen you reconnect with God and lead our family spiritually. I've seen you, you know, husband, you're not powerless here. You're not, you don't have to think that you're a victim here and that you have no ability to change the influence that you've had on your wife.
That's good. So another wife made this statement. I tried to talk to my husband. He wasn't interested in listening to me. So I just stopped talking.
Well, we've seen this a lot. Isn't it interesting? You want to talk about shutting down the core of a woman, get her to say, I'm done talking.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, because that you've taught me this, and I've seen this in my own experience and then just with many, many women, is that, you know, if a woman is talking, she's sharing who she is. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, most women are verbal processors, and so if her mouth's moving, something of who she is coming out.
And being shared with you,
yeah,
right? That's beauty of what you just said.
And so what this woman is saying is essentially, you've affected the shutdown of my core because I'm not talking anymore. That's powerful. I mean, that's sad, but it's powerful.
Right. And so some of these statements are just for thought to see if they apply in your situation. So we're just going down our list. One of the ways that one of the guys was sharing about protecting his wife, he said, I've got a new plan. I'm going to manage my eyes at every opportunity so that I look on things that are good. And I'm going to control my mind, and I'm going to have some thought control. And I'm not going to put myself in risky places because I want to protect my wife.
And I think that's a great way to frame it up, as protecting your wife. It's not just about you being a man of integrity in terms of purity. It's about saying this has a direct effect on my spouse. Well, folks, this has been a lot of random thoughts, but we hope they've been helpful and that you've been able to piece some of them together for your own journey. If you would like more help on your journey to healing and growth, please reach out and connect with us. We are a safe place where you can share your story and begin to get help and healing. So we'll give you that information in a moment. We look forward to having you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.